entertainment.ie. I love the way you say film.
Hello and welcome back to the film show. How are the guys today?
Good.
You too, as opposed to the imaginary listener.
The imaginary listener, who may or may not be listening. We don't know.
I hope they are well, though. I hope you're well, listener. What?
That was so lame.
No, it was...
I hope you're well,
isn't
listener.
I think
nice?
I did the exact same thing like 2 weeks ago, where I'm like, how's your day going?
Are you having
commuter?
A good time?
Yeah.
Are you having a good time?
That's because you just don't want to wish good wishes to strangers.
No, I do. It's just, I'm kind of like, it's, you know...
You never shake a stranger's hand on the street?
No, not at all. Or,
well,
or
doff don't
my
do that.
Cap that I don't wear. A cap that is proverbial.
How do you do?
How do you do, sir?
All right, enough messing.
Stop your messing.
We have plenty of movie news to get through. I'm going to dive straight in.
Movie news.
Potential prequel / sequel to Heat coming out. This is coming from Michael Mann. Do you want to take us into it?
Yeah, so the story with this is that, and it's kind of weird, right? Michael Mann is writing a prequel / sequel to Heat for this imprint that he now has for HarperCollins, the book publisher.
Yeah, and so it's a novel, just to emphasize, rather than a movie.
Okay.
Yeah. No, but this is the thing. He has said that... It will absolutely be... he initially intended it to be a movie treatment.
Yeah.
But now as he's talking more about it and he says it's like 2/3 of the way done, he says, oh, no, it'll probably be a TV series.
So this could be his foray into
kind
big
of,
TV. Has he done any TV?
Oh, yeah, he's done loads. Like,
oh,
He was like one of the executive producers on Miami Vice back in the 80s. Like,
I thought it was just the movie reboot.
No. He was like one of the producers and he was like really... involved with the actual, like, he was the guy who basically said that in Miami Vice, the colors have to pop. They've got to be coming right out of the screen. There can't be any earth tones, no browns, no oranges.
Wow, yeah.
All kind of thing. Like, the car's got to be white. Their suit has to be bright blue. You know, it's all going to be really strong, vibrant colors.
Wow, yeah.
And the reason his thinking behind that was, and this will tell you how feckin' smart he is, was that, you know, this show is about to be meant to be about opulence, but also like there's a dinginess
seediness
underneath
to it. Yeah,
seediness. And like, what is seediness if not the most obvious
gaudy kind of thing.
Garish colors you can think. And that's really what Miami Vice was. Miami Vice was this garish technicolor thing. And then you look at something like Heat, and Heat is all about, like, you know, the grays and the sort of blues,
yeah,
and it's all kind of like muddled and what have you. And that kind of plays into the relationship between Al Pacino and Robert De Niro and the fact that they're kind of two sides of the same coin and their own kind of lives are intertwined.
Yeah.
I'm gone way off point. I love
no,
Heat.
No.
Just I love Heat.
Can you give us some of your trivia about Heat that you previously had?
I've got so much.
You have 30 seconds to do 5 bullet points.
Okay, first part. The end music for it, God Moving Over the Face of the Waters by Moby. Originally, there was a song written by the composer Elliot Goldenthal. Michael Mann rejected it. And then that piece of music was then used in Michael Collins, the end of Michael Collins. That music was originally intended for Heat.
Boom!
I love...
Boom!
Boom!
Plus, it's a Michael Collins movie.
Yeah, Michael Collins. But Heat is a TV series. Yeah, I could see this. I could totally see this. Because what he says is that... The series is about, the novel. And
it's a young De Niro.
Correct, yeah. It's like Robert De Niro when he was in prison. And it's Al Pacino's character when he was in the Chicago Police Force. So
brilliant.
Like them in like the 70s/80s. Perfect.
Like what ITV did with Endeavor Morse. Sorry, that's so specific. Just let
what?
It sit there. Now, anyway.
there was an Endeavor Morse.
There was a show...
I know Inspector Morse.
With Inspector Morse. And then they made a prequel show called Endeavor because his first name was Endeavor. So his name was Endeavor Morse. And they called the show Endeavor. But not only that, me and my mates had a gag that because his sidekick in the show, Inspector Morse, was called Lewis, that they'd have to cast a small baby to be his sidekick in the prequel.
And he's just carrying the baby around with him.
Like the baby would keep coming in handy and like saving his neck. Because he's like tenacious and more blue collar than a young Endeavor.
Than Endeavor. I remember the car from Morse. It was in a JAG.
Maybe they'll make a movie. To bring it back to the bug.
I like the idea of this for a TV series. I actually see it from what Michael Mann has described of what it's actually going to entail, which is basically it's Robert De Niro's character in jail in his 20s and then what happened after the events of Heat. And then similarly with Al Pacino's character, it's of him working somewhere else.
In
before
the Chicago Police Force.
Yeah, exactly. Before he moved to
Los Angeles.
Los Angeles. Mm. That's right. And then the aftermath
of Heat. Have
you seen Heat? I have, but I didn't really like it.
Why?
Because it's so long and boring.
Hi.
There are scenes in it that I really like and that I remember. I was zoning in and out of it a lot. So I remember, like, obviously that cafe conversation.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember the ending. And mm-hmm. I remember the actual robbery. And then nothing else happened. Like, it's just so long. And...
I could mediate this because you're a massive fan.
Gigantic.
I watched it for the third time last month.
And?
I think it's pretty good. No, I don't know if I've overanalyzed it or whatever.
Yeah.
I've read loads about it.
Yeah.
You know when you're kind of able to just go scene to scene and go like, oh, very good. I see what they did there. There's loads of amazing scenes in it.
Like, yeah. I can recognize that it's a good movie. I'm not watching it and making the argument that it's a bad movie.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It's good. I personally found it quite boring.
It's very masculine. It's more masculine than most action movies, I'd say.
I would, but I don't mean that. I don't think that necessarily means that it's like...
No, yeah, that doesn't just make it slaggable, I suppose.
Yeah, like, I mean, I don't know if it... By saying it's masculine, I think that kind of automatically kind of raises the eyebrow and you're thinking, is it misogynistic? And I don't think it is. I don't think so. I mean, like, I've watched it a lot. Like, I've seen it, like, at least 30, 40 times.
It kind of
like,
touches on their relationships and their...
Yeah.
How messed up they actually are.
Yeah, I mean, like, okay, if you want to delve into it, like, I mean, I guess you could say that, like, the relationships that they have with women are very one-dimensional. And, like, they're kind of almost a distraction almost. But I feel like in my kind of reading of Heat, the way I've always seen this film, when you kind of boil it down... It's basically about what is the cost of being the very best at what you do. As in, like, Al Pacino's character is the best LAPD detective there is, but he has absolutely no personal life whatsoever. He just is all about his work. He can't do anything else but his job. And Robert De Niro is the same thing as well. Like, his whole thing is like, allow nothing into
your life. You gotta be able to leave.
Yeah, yeah, allow nothing into your life that you cannot walk out on in 30 seconds flat when you spot the heat coming around the corner. And that idea of, like, he's just completely shut himself down. But in both cases, it's an external force. It's a woman coming into their lives, that changes them and changes their perspective. Like, in the case of Al Pacino, when Natalie Portman's character tries to commit suicide, and then Robert De Niro's character, with Amy Brenneman, when he realizes that he's actually having feelings for someone.
Yeah.
And it, you know, like, it's just, I think it, there are so many layers of it. Like, I love it so much. I could talk about it forever. Let's move on.
So it is shite, is it?
Yeah.
But what I don't get is, I get how it would work as a TV series. Yeah. I find it very confusing how it's supposed to work. And it is being written as a novel. So do you read it and then there's just like a couple of blank pages to represent the movie? Like, I just find that very strange. You know,
I hope
I mean?
It turns into just fan fiction word for word the movie. Like, once he gets to that point, like the whole last third is just you've seen it, now read it.
You know, like, I'd watch it. I would read it. Like, I like like, the minute this comes out, I'm fucking buying it. Like, 100, like, literally, I'll be there, like, with, like, total, like, please sign it, sir.
Yeah, literally.
Like,
yeah.
Jesus, like, I'll be camping out
in the queues outside the bookstore.
I'll be camping out, man. Like, Jesus, like, I am gonna
Plenty there, at least for TV. Like, in terms of how do you get to that stage of a character.
Completely.
Yeah. Like, loads.
Completely. Like, and I think it would work better as a prequel than a sequel. I don't see how they could make this into a sequel. Like.
But the idea is that it would be both.
It will be both in the book.
But that's why I'm confused by how that works in a novel. In a TV series, it makes sense because you just move on to the next episode.
Yeah.
But how do you make that transition in a novel, if you get what I mean?
Yeah.
Yeah, chapter to chapter, maybe. I don't know.
I just want to see who they cast. Like, anyway.
And then, do you just have a blank page that says, now go watch Heat, and then they turn page and it's the sequel. Yeah, you know what I mean?
Yeah,
it
it
strikes me as very strange.
Yeah. I guess we'll figure it out.
I just love that we have talked books, TV, and movies so far.
Nice.
That's nice.
If anybody needs
Power of Michael Mann.
Yeah, he's touched all forms. All right. From one action movie to another, we've got Terminator Dark Fate. Mm-hmm. There's been some developments.
Oh, you're turning to me. I thought you would turn to Brian as our in-house Terminator pro.
You like Terminator, don't
I
you?
Do like Terminator also.
Nobody doesn't like Terminator. Or well, yeah, no, there must, no, they must be out there.
I think there's a lot of people out there who love it. Like,
But Dark Fate may be the start of a new trilogy. So what happened was when James Cameron was going in with his writing team to propose this to Linda Hamilton, they wrote the film as this kind of three movie arc and saying, so I assume that if this is getting two sequels, they are once again going to revolve around the character of Sarah Connor. So I suppose the whole idea was they were bringing this project to her and proposing it as, you know, this kind of long form, you know, getting into the nitty gritty of where your character is going to go on this journey. Yes. And stuff like that. Also more money because three movies.
Sure.
So yeah, that's where this whole thing has come from. But obviously it is going to depend on the financial success of Dark Fate. So we'll have to see. I'd like to see sequels if this is good, but yes. I feel like it's very hard to talk about it without having seen it. It's due for release in late October, but I'm definitely going to watch it and give it a shot. Like, I have seen all of the Terminator sequels. I didn't even mind Genesis that much, although at the same time I was also like, but a sequel to this is probably just going to be a poorer version of this, and this was okay. So yeah. Do I really want to see something that's less than okay, if you get what I mean? And then Salvation and what was the third?
Rise of the Machines.
Terminator. Yeah,
that, and don't forget Terminator 3.
Yeah, Rise of the Machines. Yeah.
Oh, sorry. Yeah, of course. Yeah. Sorry. I just realized that might have actually been like one of the earliest reboots in a way. It kind of felt like there was a long delay between 2 and 3.
Yeah, that was huge. Yeah, it was like 1992, and then Rise of the Machines, I think, was like 2003
or 4.
Yeah, around that time.
But there was a big gap between Terminator and Terminator 2 as well.
That's fair, That's fair, yeah.
Stylistically, though. I mean, they were all three of them are different.
I think that's it. Like, I mean, like, the way that they kind of looked at it was like, the first Terminator was a horror film.
Yeah.
The second film was a chase film. The third...
It's kind of action chase.
Action chase. But like,
thriller,
A chase. Like, they're chasing after the T-1000. The third film was...
No, it's chasing after them.
Oh, chasing after them. Sorry, correct. Sorry, my point. The third film was a comedy. Because, like, when you watch Rise of the Machine, it's basically like you play Benny Hill music over certain
parts. Is that like the graveyard shootout and stuff? I know exactly what you mean. It was really camp or something.
It was really camp.
But then the ending is like, it's the end of the world.
It's the end of the
world. Now they're in a bunker. So,
yeah. Literally starts there. Like, what the hell?
But even, I love in your article about this, the statement from James Cameron or whatever, it really implied that, like, he took a long weekend and finally decided to sit down and watch everything that had been made out of Terminator, as if it had never been on his radar before.
To be fair,
which I might believe.
I would kind of believe, this was it. I would.
Did he just sell the IP and please trot on that for 20 years?
I think so, because he's been very, they brought him in. It was funny, but when they were doing Genesis, they brought him in literally as part of the marketing campaign. They were like, look, just say nice things about this film.
Yeah.
And I guess we'll pay. I mean, they obviously pay.
Yeah.
I don't know. But they basically brought him in and were like, look, just say nice things.
Purely ambassador role.
Purely
kind of
as an ambassador, as in, like, I'm James Cameron and I approve this message kind of thing. And then, of course, Genesis turned out to be shit.
Actually, did you ever watch that interview that Amelia Clark did after Genesis? Oh my gosh, it's such a cringy thing, because they're asking her about sequels and she's basically like, my agent says no. So
she says, no matter what, I am surely going to refuse.
Well, basically, at this point, they had refused. So.
Oh, yeah. God, I didn't hate Genesis compared to the other
ones. That's the thing. I actually thought it was definitely the best of anything that came after Terminator 2.
Yeah, exactly. Agree, yeah. What's the name of that guy from Everest and stuff?
Jason Clark?
Yes, that is Jason Clark. Yeah.
And it's Jason Clark and Amelia Clark, funnily enough. And someone else? Who's the other one in it?
The guy, oh my God, Jai Courtney.
Yes.
Exactly.
He was very good in it, yeah.
But, like, do you not feel Jai Courtney, like, if there were 20 people standing white men in front of me, I couldn't pick Jai Courtney out of the lineup.
Especially if you have Tom Hardy and who's that other one?
Joel Kinnaman.
Yes.
Yeah.
They all look
people with big traps.
The three of them look so alike.
Big traps, blonde, white, and like
stubbledy face.
Yeah, stubbledy face and look intense. Yeah, I can't tell them apart like at all. Like Tom Hardy, like he's a really good actor, and like Joel Kinnaman is an okay actor.
And then Jai's bringing
and Jai
them
Courtney
down.
Is there. Stealing a living. So good for him, I guess. Like, I bet you any money. I know this is terrible, and I don't mean to rag on Jai Courtney.
Oh, here we go.
I genuinely think it's like, okay, where are we with money? Okay, we've got Tom Hardy money. We've got Joel Kinnaman money. And now we've got...
Oh, that's definitely a thing.
That's like, he's literally, he is like, there's Cut Price and then there's like the Aldi brand.
There must be a graph.
Tom Hardy.
That is, there must be a graph somewhere that has actor.
That's like where he's like, it's here, it's here, it's here. And then like there's...
This would be a really good game. I'd love to get like the bargain bin variety of every actor.
Yeah, it's like Jai Courtney. There you go.
They're all Jai. Okay, keep moving. Oh yeah, we've got Joker. None of us have seen
it. I'm really worried, by the way, every time we mention one of these movies people think we've seen it and we're about to review it, but we haven't seen
now
it
now we're
people.
About to have another. No, this is purely speculative news.
This is,
but Brian, fill us in. The reviews have been leaking out of Venice.
Yeah, so this got its premiere at Venice. I haven't seen it. Nobody at this table has seen it. I can only go by what I've read on Twitter. And this is the thing. See, this is the problem with like trying to get a kind of a sense of a film from Twitter is that you're basically getting 140 characters.
Yes.
That's all you're getting. Mm-hmm. You're not getting anything more. You're not getting anything less. But not only that as well, I genuinely believe there are some critics, and I'm not saying they're anyone we know or whatever, but I genuinely believe there are certain critics that go for the most extreme possible reaction.
For retweets.
Correct.
Oh, yeah. Correct. I believe you're right. Yeah.
What is it? Like, I'd rather burn my house down than
it's like literally, I would rather, like, give my firstborn child to a wolf pack than watch any more of the Joker.
Yeah.
Or, by the same token, the people literally rioted after they saw Joker for how amazing it was. There was this tweet, right? And I swear to Christ, I think I like...
When you mentioned about giving the baby to the wolf pack, by the way, I just had the Jungle Book in my head and I was like, oh, that's nice.
That's a great idea.
Okay, well, I meant that in a bad way.
No, I do get what you mean.
And also, I just want you to elaborate. I love the idea of people rioting for how much they enjoy it.
It's just like flipping cars over, like me and Donald Clark.
I thought it was great.
Over.
It's fucking amazing. Had a really good time. I'm so good.
But there was this tweet by this account, and it was called, and I swear to God, like, I am convinced it's a parody account. It has to be a parody account. But it was called International Film Critique.
Excusez-moi.
Yeah, and like, I swear to God, you should see it, because like, it was like literally just somebody vomited a thesaurus on this tweet about Joker.
Okay, yeah.
And it was like, I'll show it to you when we're done with here. Like, it was like, this film is effacious and it is a multisante and okay. it has such virtuoso details and the compunction.
I think we better tell people to just look it up.
Like, I swear to God, like, I remember looking, I was like, this has got to be a
when people get too wrapped up in that, they don't grammatically make sense anymore, and that's what bothers me the most.
Okay,
too many adjectives.
I was kidding there. I was not reading that verbatim. I'm just remembering what I saw. Yeah.
But like, I feel like I saw someone share a similar review, and it was like their little line from Rotten Tomatoes, and I genuinely wonder if it was the same critic, because it was something very similar.
Was it?
Yeah.
Might have been,
yeah.
Well, look, I have a few here. We have Radek Folta.
Rotten Tomatoes approved.
But like, oh, so yeah. Are we. Like,
yeah, but we're great. I got.
Are you supposed to name drop the fact that you're Rotten Tomatoes approved?
Because yes, we are.
But I got approved long before Brian.
They had to send Brian up to another floor of screening.
I feel like I'm going to need to pause for a moment and address the fact that it was 2 weeks.
It wasn't 2 weeks.
It was like 3 weeks.
No, it was longer than that, Brian.
It was like four weeks.
It was 6 weeks.
It was at least a month. It probably was closer to 6 weeks, yeah. Anyway.
Make of that what you will.
I mean, like, you know, I don't even know what to say here. Like, I mean, I have such a body of work that maybe there was more of it to get through.
Are people allowed to go onto your Rotten Tomatoes profile
voice
their opinions on those reviews?
No, I don't think so.
Is there an upvote system?
I don't think so. I don't know.
Is there a downvote system?
I don't think so. I mean,
I would be very upset if I was getting downvoted as a critic, if I'm honest. That would, yeah.
These opinions stink.
Who reviews the reviewers?
Yeah, this is what I mean. Yeah.
Oh, I like that.
Meta. Well, I don't know. I'm excited for it.
I'm so excited. Especially, I don't know if you guys saw the final trailer. Just looked
gorgeous,
amazing.
Yeah.
I know that this film is going to devastate me.
Yeah.
And I'm going to come out of that cinema like questioning humanity.
Yeah.
And, you know, are we done for? Just asking the big questions. And I mean, I know that Brian was saying before that some people are kind of saying, oh, it's too much of this, of that. But at the end of the day, like, it's starting like so many conversations. And I think that that's going to be a testament to its power anyway. You know, it's the point being that it's inciting really strong reactions. And I think that's a good
better
thing.
Better than Suicide Squad.
One thing I will say, though, is like, that I find, and it's a point people were making over the weekend when the reviews were coming up. I think it might have been either IndieWire said it or David Ehrlich in IndieWire. I forget what I was. But anyway,
go on.
Basically, the point he made was that from now on, if you want to see, like, you know, a really interesting, you know, well-written adult story about, like, you know, something as dark as like a person's insanity and all this kind of thing, the only way you're going to get that now is if it's wrapped up in a comic book.
Supervillain,
yeah.
Well, that's because The Dark Knight was probably the last kind of film that got to like critics and audiences to that extent where people were having like these huge conversations.
I think
about
it's such a big
after,
like,
you know.
I think it's always been the job of DC to be that other side of the coin to Marvel. And it's great to see them finally fill in that darker role.
Which is so appropriate because The Dark Knight has the coins. Sorry.
What?
No, The Dark Knight with Harvey Dent.
That is another Batman villain. Yeah. Right.
That's a very good point. Yeah, like DC were always,
and it's closer to the source material if they're basing it. They said they base it a bit on The Killing Joke and stuff.
Killing
like,
Joke,
but
yeah.
Not only that, but haven't seen it either. But I knew that they were going for themes of stuff like he's an outsider, like Taxi Driver.
Yes,
but
King of
Taxi
Driver
and
a,
King of Comedy, they don't. It looks wholesale. Taken.
Oh yeah. For,
which I don't mind in terms of that kind of derivative breathe fresh life into it, but it looks like those two movies mashed together with clown paint on.
Yeah, like, definitely. And like that's it. Like, I mean, it's that thing of like, I would kind of see it almost as a kind of a remix or a cover band or something.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
That kind of way. Which I'm like, shit, absolutely. Like, I mean, there hasn't been, I mean, the closest thing I could say to a film being like Taxi Driver recently would be something like maybe Nightcrawler. I fucking love Nightcrawler. So, 100%. I mean, look, the thing that's kind of bugged me about Joker is that it's going to be very hard, and this is just me talking shop or whatever. I don't know how you feel, but I think it's going to be difficult for me to go in and watch it now and keep all that shit out of my head.
Yeah,
I
think that's an issue with any film, but particularly a film like this.
Already sparking.
Yeah, and I mean, the fact that it's not just the early reviews, you've got so many legacies that it's carrying. It's got to be a Joker Origins movie. I'd also like to point out that when this film was first in talks, Brian was giving out yards about it, saying, you can't make a Joker Origins movie because the whole point of a Joker movie is that you're not meant to know where he originated from. Blah, blah, blah. Is that not what you said?
That is
verbatim.
That is exactly... No,
in that moany voice.
I freely admit, I absolutely said that. That's absolutely correct. I did say that and I stand by it. I do think...
I'm laughing at you and I agree with you a bit.
No, but I mean...
The Killing Joke was the one comic book to do that.
To
put
do
a name
it
on him and stuff.
Correct. That was it. Like, The Killing Joke did it and did it right. But even at that, like, The Killing Joke, it was the whole thing of, like, they even addressed it themselves. It was like, you know, sometimes I remember it one way, sometimes I remember it the other way. If I'm going to have an origin story, I want it to be multiple choice.
And maybe he made it all up for the laugh, yeah.
Correct, yeah. And I think... I mean, the fact that, like, this film is taking deviation from, you know, all of the kind of established mythology or whatever you want to call it. I'm fine with that. I just think, me personally, in the kind of the, I don't know, the pantheon of pop culture, we never really cared about what where Joker came from. We cared about what he did.
That's why Heath Ledger's one was so good. He's
correct.
Chaos kind
of
thing. Yeah,
that was it. He was like, I mean, the way that Christopher Nolan referred to him was he was like, he's the shark in Jaws. He just comes up, fucks things up, and then he's gone away. You don't care where the shark comes from. You don't care what they're motivated by. You just know that they're
there. Well, you can't compare an animal.
I'm saying that's the way that Christopher Nolan viewed him as. Like, isn't the idea of he's just this force of nature that comes and goes out of the storm.
Well, then last question. Are we going to see Robert Pattinson versus Joaquin Phoenix? Is that the goal of it? Surely they can't do an origin story without working it into the Batman.
I don't know.
Well, I mean, I feel like the Robert Pattinson one. Well, that's
is it
still
a completely
a while
different
away, isn't it?
World? Surely not.
I don't know.
He won't be the first villain from that, but I presume they're bringing him back in to fight. Yeah, it's
I don't
too
know.
Early.
This is it. I don't know. Like, I mean, I would presume, you know, I mean, like, Bruce Wayne is in the trailer. He's the little kid that he's, like, forcing his face up. Yeah.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, that's Bruce Wayne, like.
Oh, brilliant.
And so I would presume that, you know, there is going to be some sort of connection with it, whether Robert Pattinson is involved and it becomes this kind of shared,
aged Joaquin or something.
Aged Joaquin, maybe. I don't know. I mean, I guess we're just going to have to see.
Yeah. I like the way it's going, finally. Mm-hmm. I'm finally happy to say maybe DC. I don't know.
Yeah, we'll see. Like, I mean, I think it's interesting. I think it's ballsy. I do like the fact that they're trying to give this an element of artistic credibility by pulling in somebody like Joaquin Phoenix, who is very fucking...
I mean, it's not a studio movie.
No.
You know? And that's what they need to, I think, get away from. Because every time they've let directors go and do their own thing, and Patty Jenkins with Wonder Woman, I'd say, is another example of it. It's worked.
Yeah.
As opposed to when you get something like Justice League, which is all studio, it isn't working for them. So they just need to leave them the fuck alone.
Brilliant.
I've been cursing a lot on this show.
Yeah.
More than Brian. I'll stop that now.
No, you can't.
All right, last piece of news. The Lion King has been lording over the box office. Still.
Yeah. It's now the 7th highest grossing film of all time, which is crazy. I mean,
worldwide,
it's only been out. Like worldwide, like ever. Obviously, these things are like, you know, inflation and all that. But yeah, like it's, I think the only ones above it are like Jurassic World, Star Wars, The Force Awakens, Avatar, Titanic, and Infinity War and Endgame. That's it. And it is now the highest grossing animated movie of all time, which I didn't realize, it's beaten out Frozen.
You are joking. Yeah. I had no idea. People just keep going and keep going.
Yeah, it's made $1.5 billion worldwide. It's made $6 million in the Irish box office, which is
6.18,
which is like a mint for the Irish box office. Like, it really, really is. So yeah, just madness. Everyone
people just
going,
got out to see it, I suppose.
Yeah, like I checked
families.
That's it. Families. Like, I mean, I checked the top 10 box office for this week for the Irish one, and yeah, like we were saying, like, it was 6.18 million. But like, it's been out on release in Ireland for 7 weeks, and it's number 2 at the box office. Like,
it's after, just behind Tarantino, is it?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, after Once Upon a Time
in
Hollywood.
That's mad. What else is it beaten?
It's beaten. God, it bet like Toy Story is still in cinemas, and that's like 5.2, I think, or something like that. Bet Good Boys. It bet Angel Has Fallen. It's
Stuber still out.
Stupid. But yeah, like
more
it's
like stupid.
Brilliant.
Yes, nailed it.
That's why people tune in.
We got it. But yeah, no, it's great. Like, I think a lot of it, like, that's always been the way though. With family films, is that they will literally stay on in cinemas, because the minute there's any kind of a bank holiday, parents will just be like, "Yep, bring them to the cinema," and they're gonna go watch whatever's there. And if it's Lion King or if it's Toy Story 4, or if it's...
I'm curious if kids are enjoying this film.
Are they going
to see it multiple times? Yeah.
Apparently maybe, so.
They obviously haven't seen the original.
Yeah, that's what I mean. It's like, do they want more beige in the cinemas? That's the secret. They need less.
Yeah,
that's kind of upsetting, isn't it? And it means that obviously this whole live action remake thing isn't going to go away, which is very upsetting.
Yeah.
Because I really wanted it to piss
off. I wonder, are they getting in trouble internally where it's like, box office success, critical failure. Rinse and repeat?
I don't think they care.
I don't think they care.
About the critical reception at all now.
Yeah. Wow. I mean, I think, like, ultimately, like, you know, they'll continue to make money.
Yeah, it's money-making.
It is. I mean, that's...
No, it is, yeah.
Like, I mean, as horrible as that is to admit, I think, ultimately, artistic kind of credibility is secondary to
profit.
Mm-hmm. Like,
I don't know why I keep forgetting that.
It's so true. Like, I mean, you know,
it's not cynical at all. That's
I feel like the last thing they hellscape. Really put kind of, you know, emotional investment and time in, and I am so glad they did, was for Endgame, in fairness. You know, like that. I felt like that could have just been another studio film, but I felt like they really, really tried, and the Russo brothers knew what they were.
They gave them both, you know, to very good directors, yeah.
And Infinity War as well. Yeah. I mean, they've done that right, but I was very unimpressed with Far From Home. And I mean, it kind of shows, because I know it did well at the box office. I don't think it did extraordinary. Like, Lion King beat it by a long shot.
Oh, definitely. Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. I think it's just...
I suppose you could attribute it to... If you hadn't seen it 2 weeks ago and your kids still haven't seen it, you're still just going to find a way to get along to it the next weekend.
Yeah.
But the thing is, like, that when you get films that are taking in these kind of receipts, it's people going to them multiple times. So really? I'm just surprised at how many people are enjoying this so much. They're going to see it again. It's very strange to me. Whereas, like, everyone who I've kind of talked to, who's our age anyway, if they've gone to see it, have been like, sucked.
Regret. I mean, it's not
ticket.
A 2 out of 10.
I feel like you gave it like 2.5 or
two
something.
2.5 or something.
Stars, yeah.
Yeah, like, I mean,
it is. Yeah.
It is, but like, that being said, like, I mean, I've talked to people with kids. Kids love it. They fucking can't get enough of it. Like, and I would think it's that thing of like, if they saw the original, would they think the same? Probably. I don't know.
I'm sure they've all seen the original.
Blu-rays? Yeah, maybe not. I don't know. It is quite the head scratcher, though, how much money Lion King has made. I am quite mystified by it. Like,
we
I think kids
it
are just easily amused, you know?
Probably.
They see the, you know, CGI that almost looks like it could be an animal. And oh my gosh, the animals are talking and singing and there's pretty colors.
Yeah.
And, you know, photo.
But then I'm sure there's a listener
animation.
At home who's like, those three movie critics talking shite about a movie that was bad. I don't know.
Like, yeah,
people
get
very defensive when it comes to Disney. It's kind of extraordinary. I mentioned on the show a few weeks ago when I gave Beauty and the Beast, the remake, like 3.5 stars. And like some dad commented directly on the review saying, what are you talking about? This is a 5-star movie. I'm like, dude,
it's not
a 5-star movie.
Like, why do you care so much? Like, Jesus.
It was very strange.
I'll defend it to the death.
Yeah. And I know it was a dad because he was talking about bringing his kids and it being like a magical experience. Like, that's what Disney do, even in their live action remake. It's just that the soul is gone.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
But then again, you always kind of, this is the thing that I always kind of question about this stuff. Is it just because we're now older?
It could be that.
That we're now older. I think about that. Like, I thought about that with Lion King when I was watching it. I was like, is it just because, like, Lion King was one of the first films I saw in a cinema. And I was like, I was really young and I was really taken by it. And now I'm like, whatever age I am now, older than the Christ.
Yeah.
And
maybe we need to go back, read the reviews of The Lion King at the time and see if those critics
great point.
Thought it was
maybe,
good or not.
Yeah, maybe.
I think so much of it is curmudgeonliness.
I think there is that thing of like, this is the new version of the old thing I love. Fuck this.
I feel like that about everything we review to an extent.
Kind of, a little bit. Yeah. I'm like, I don't like this.
Why are they messing with Star Wars? Yeah, I don't know.
Actually, speaking of Disney live action remakes, just because I watched Hunchback of Notre Dame during the week, I feel like that could make a good live action remake.
It was a very different kind of animation as well, wasn't it? Like, yeah.
But I feel like it's not kind of beholden to the animation, like,
it's another classic story.
If you get what
like,
I mean.
It is, yeah.
And who was it? Fellow reviewer Graham Day also gave a shout out to Hercules. That would also
Hercules,
work well as live action.
I love Hercules.
It's such a good one, yeah.
It's the most fun.
I love, like, James Woods is Hades.
Great music, yeah.
Yeah.
Like, I love the film for James
You can
James
keep
Woods.
Going there, Owen.
I thought you would all join in.
I know. I don't know the songs that well, but I just remember Hades.
What? The songs are so good.
I know the songs are good.
I know all the lyrics to all of them. I actually do.
Okay. great, and I'm happy for you.
We should set up a Patreon where, like, D singing is behind a locked post.
It's behind a locked, exactly. You'll get to hear, you'll get to hear D.
We'll do the
singing.
Whole soundtrack. I'll join in. Yeah.
Actually, our colleague Mairead, she was listening to Disney music just earlier today. Right,
yeah, it was like really quiet in the office, and it was just like somebody playing The Lion King.
Yeah, hear, it like, was Circle of Life.
Oh my god, I am actually gonna have to go listen to these tracks. Yeah. All right, that was a mammoth amount of movie news, and now we've got two juicy reviews.
Movie reviews.
So we've got It Chapter 2, Brian. Talk us through it.
Right.
Oh, no spoilers, because I'm actually seeing this tonight.
You're going to see this tonight.
I'm very
excited. Yeah.
The trailer looked amazing.
Yeah, the trailer is great. It's nearly 3 hours long, though.
Really? Right?
That's what I would say about this film is that, like, it is, I think it's like 20 minutes shy of, no, 10 minutes shy of like 3 hours, and you feel it. Jesus Christ, do you feel it? Like, I mean, I was watching this, and the whole time I was watching it, was like, look, I get that, you know, there is a sort of elevated, almost messianic kind of viewing of the text, and that, like, you've got to be faithful to the text, and, like, you know, Stephen King is this multi-selling author, and he's written all these incredible novels, and you've got to absolutely get it right down to the miniaturized, just zero in the details. You've got to get everything.
But I feel like people don't do that.
Well, like,
often,
I mean, this is it. Like, see, this is it. Because when I was watching it, it was like, they basically go through, the whole story is that the Losers Club reunite.
Yeah.
And each of them
27 years after the events of the first movie.
There you go. And they're basically, the, you know, Pennywise has come back. And now they've got,
and he hasn't aged a day.
Not a day,
bloody soul eater.
That crazy kid. Anyways, and they have to perform this thing called the Ritual of Chud, which will basically banish Pennywise to wherever it is that he'll go. And in order to do that, they have
You're giving away way too much. Stop, I don't know any of this.
Okay. So anyways, they basically then have to face their fears.
I thought they did that.
That's much better.
When they chucked him down the sewer.
Correct. Yeah, it becomes this thing where it's like a battle of wills.
Is it very much a mirror image to the first one?
No.
Do the kids appear in it?
The kids are in it a lot. Like, I mean, because there's lots of flashbacks in it and that kind of thing. And then as well, that when they start to have... I'm conscious that Dee hasn't seen it yet, so I don't want to go too far into it.
Sorry, I got very annoyed there. But literally all of the, like, plot summaries that you see online are like, 27 years later, the kids have to go back, now adults, to face Pennywise again. That's all I know about it.
Okay,
and I haven't read the Stephen King book, and I haven't seen the 1991 miniseries, and I want to be a surprise.
Okay.
And you loved the first one.
I really liked the first one.
I did. You see, this is it. Yeah, me too. I loved the first one. I really, really liked the first one. I thought it was really well made. I think they blended, like, Stand By Me meets, you know, Creepshow.
Yeah, really well done.
Like, it was really, really well done. Like, they caught the innocence, and then they caught, like, the horror. They got it together so well. So going into this, I was immediately like, how are they going to do this? Because obviously they're adults. So obviously they've got a few years on them now. So it's like, how do we still capture that sense of innocence? How do we kind of still care about them? How
the wholesomeness to it or something.
Yeah, how do we kind of maintain that wholesomeness and what have you?
And also, like, it looks silly when adults get scared.
Correct.
Okay.
Correct.
Do you not think? Yeah, that's a good point.
Like, so many horrors are revolved around young people.
Vulnerable. Yeah. Vulnerable.
Yeah. Okay, yeah. Vulnerable, but because even when I saw the castings, I loved it. I'm looking forward to seeing how they tie these characters together.
Yeah.
So is there a lot of work done going, like, that's Bill Hader now?
Yeah, oh yeah, no, definitely. Like, I mean, when you watch it, like, you can really see, like, it's very well cast. Like, Bill Hader's younger version, he's the kid from Finn Wolfhard from Stranger Things. Like, they're very, very spot on. Same with Jessica Chastain and the young girl who plays the version of her,
Beverly
Marsh. But what's the actor's name?
Ooh, I forget.
Yeah, anyways. So whatever, but they adapt to one another. Like, it's very, very well cast in that way. The issue I had was not necessarily with their performance or even with how they kind of approach the horror, because they really do get that blockbuster kind of horror. There's a lot of CGI in it, but it's very, very well done. And there's a lot of, like, special effects in it, but again, it's very, very well done.
That's a red flag. I'm like, It doesn't turn into Final Destination.
No, not like Final Destination. No. This would be more like, imagine if like you gave the budget that, like, say, I don't know, Infinity War to a horror film. How would that look like? You can see every penny spent on it.
Every penny wise. Hey! He spent.
Really good.
Nice. The issue is that like it spends so long, like, just luxuriating in it, and it's
the shorter half of the novel as well, isn't it?
You would think that, like, yeah. But like the thing of it is that the film spends so long going through each individual member of the Losers Club story.
Okay, yeah. It does a Suicide Squad.
Kind of, yeah. Like, it's just the pacing of it just grinds to a halt. Mm. And you're like, this is really well done. This is a really scary scene. I love how you're doing this, but I don't need to see this 5 times. Like,
yeah.
You could have just condensed this in some way, or kind of, I don't know, just, it could have been done so much, like, someone should have really, like, okay, we're going to have to cleave this down because 3 hours is way too long.
Sure. Mm.
And like, I'm not even thinking back in it. I'm like, you know, there's so many scenes where it's like, you could have just cut that entire scene out and I would have got what you were getting for.
Yeah. Like, just to compare it to it, like, I didn't feel like we overstayed our welcome with any of those individual characters, you know?
Yeah, correct. Mm. And like, don't get me wrong. Like, I mean, they're very well developed, and that's the thing that King does really, really well. He creates characters that, you know, you understand, you believe. And not only that as well, King's work has always been about contextualizing and actually, you know, personifying fear, you know, because that's really what it is. These characters, every single one of them is terrified by something, and it is the personification of it. So, like, the weedy kid who's always afraid of getting sick, he constantly sees this diseased person.
Yeah.
And Beverly Marsh, she sees her father who abused her and stuff like that. So, like, it's very good at, like, you know, projecting fear. But the problem is that it just takes way too long. It just spends so long going through it all that somebody should have just come in and just be like, okay, you don't need that, don't need that. We get this. Mm. You don't need to repeat it 5 times. You can do it twice and we get it.
No way. I suppose that's the thing disappointing.
Is because it was a sequel, they just left Andy Muschietti to it. I suppose maybe that was it, yeah.
Perhaps, but I think more though is the fact that, like, and this is what I was kind of getting at the beginning, is that there is this slovenly kind of like, we must do everything that's in the book. We've got to do everything in the book. And yet, when you go back and look at the first film, they cut plenty of stuff out. Now, obviously, the big feckin' orgy scene.
There was meant to be an orgy scene.
I remember reading that about that after seeing the movie and being like, Jesus, I'm really glad they didn't go there.
Correct.
Yeah. And Stephen King has said since that he really regrets writing that. So at least he realizes the immorality of it
Completely. Fair enough.
And that's it. Like, when I was watching this, I was like, well, look, you cut that out. And good reason that you cut that out. Could you have not cut this out to make it kind of a cleaner film? Like, but that being said, I enjoyed it.
Yeah, this is because this is the thing. So far, it sounds woeful.
Like, no,
but
it's
I'm
not.
Sure it must have a bit more to it.
No, God, no. Like, don't get me wrong. I really enjoyed it. I did enjoy it a lot. But just 3 hours is too long. Like,
it's weird that they're going for these super long horror movies now, because it was the same with Midsommar, wasn't it? It was something like 3 hours long.
Yeah.
But see, I feel like it's more acceptable for an art house movie to do it than a blockbuster, because you don't go to the cinema to sit there for 3 hours unless it's Endgame.
Yeah, and even in that, like, I feel like in Midsommar, the idea was that it was building tension, it was building atmosphere, and it was all about kind of like the ritual that it was building up to. Mm-hmm. Whereas in it, it just felt like, we're going to go through that character's story. Now we're going to go through that character's story. Now we're going to go through that character's story.
Don't worry, you've got 2 more after
this. Don't worry, exactly. We're going to do more. We're going to get them all. We're going to do everything. We're going to literally take the fucking book and just into a screen. We're going to fucking do it all. And like,
and that format probably works better for TV.
Correct!
Yeah, there you go.
Correct, that's it. If they had made this into a TV series, I'd be like, shit, amazing.
Yeah.
Well done, fantastic. 100%.
You just wavered a little in the cinema?
I was slipping. Like, I was just like looking at my watch.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, come on. Like, yeah, it's scary. It's very well done. Like, it's very well directed, but just fucking tighten up a bit. You know
that
what I mean?
That is exactly like, how I felt about Once Upon a Time in Hollywood.
Really? Yes, really? You saw Once Upon a Time in Hollywood.
No, like, no, keep on it for a minute.
We'll get back to it because I want to talk to you about Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. Yeah.
I still have to see that. I was going to see it this week, actually, but you know what? I feel like it's a weekend kind of movie as opposed to a weekday night because otherwise that's my entire night gone because it's so long.
Yes,
by the time I get there after work and everything,
you
I either have to go.
Whatever.
Yeah, exactly. So I either have to go to like a 6 o'clock or half six or whatever screening and then I'm leaving at 10. Exactly. Or if I go to a 9 o'clock one, it ends in the middle of the night. Yeah. So
I went to an 8:45 and it was done at midnight, I think.
Can't do that in a working week. I can't anyway. I get too tired. Also, I fall asleep in the cinema if I go too late.
It's so warm. But, okay, right. Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. It's a hangout film. It's a hangout movie. Like, it's not there's no plot as such.
That is,
you're in
now
that
I'm
world.
Prepared to have you defend it because, okay, are we switching to Once Upon a Time in Hollywood?
Okay, yeah.
Do you have any final points on?
Give us a rating,
two?
Yeah. People will be looking forward to seeing chapter two.
Once this is done, I have to go out and write the review because it's embargoed. But no, I mean, I'm going to give it I'm probably going to give it 3, 3.5. I'm wavering. Like, I'll write it and then I'll see. But I feel like it's probably going to be 3.
A 4 would have been great.
A 4,
but from them.
Don't get me wrong. Like, I mean, I'm sure there are other people who are going to love it.
Yeah,
and I've already seen like people who were at it last night were saying, "Oh, that didn't feel like 3 years." It fucking did to me.
Yeah,
it really did to me. Like,
Three. I feel like a 3-star film I could take or leave, whereas 3.5, I'm like, "Ooh, I might like this."
And like, I love the first one. I gave the first one like 4.5. Like, I really liked the first one, and another point about this finally is that like, the film kind of acknowledges itself in the sense of like. The entire like first 10 minutes is James McAvoy's character going around a film set because he's now a screenwriter.
Okay.
And they're all like, you know, because he wrote about the events of what happened to him as a child. He turned it into a book and
it'd be amazing if they were shooting like it at the start of the movie and Tim Curry was playing Pennywise. Wouldn't that have been amazing?
But poor old Tim Curry though, he's not well.
Oh.
But there is a good cameo.
Sad.
There is a good
You made my excitable idea really sad.
I'm sorry. But there's a cool cameo in it though. There is a cool cameo
Ooh,
in it.
Ooh, look out for that.
It
must be Tim Curry.
It's not Tim Curry. But there's a whole thing with he's like, people can keep coming up to him. It's like, look, we know we haven't got the sequel done yet, or we know we haven't got the ending done yet, and your endings suck, but it's okay. We know you're going to do it. And he's all like feeling the pressure. And even the director of the film that he's on the set with comes up to him. He's like, look, I know your endings suck, but don't worry, you're gonna get this. And the whole time, it's a joke throughout the film that whenever James McAvoy's character meets somebody, they're like, oh yeah, I really love your book. Your endings are terrible. And it's like, then they fucking botch it themselves in the film. The ending sucks. But like, it's just like,
it happens.
But that's exactly why they kind of put that
it in. Yeah, probably. Probably, yeah.
We've written a terrible film.
We're
going to
make jokes about it. No, you can't make fun of me because I'm making fun of it. Yeah. I do that all the time. That's my defense mechanism. I make fun of myself. So like, no one can make fun of me. That's how I do it. That's how I survive.
But we make fun of you all the time.
And then I make fun of myself while I'm doing it. So then I'm in on the joke.
It's true.
That's how I survive.
Like a duck's back.
Yeah, exactly.
A slagged duck.
I know, right? It's like, you know, it's like the thing with like hecklers and it's like, you know, like, you know, give them pointers. Like, is that thing? Yeah.
I'm laughing as well. I love that. No, it's great.
That's my
story. Okay, so yeah, right. Once Upon a Time in Hollywood.
Yeah.
Plenty of people still haven't seen it. No need to get spoilery.
Although it is number one in the box office.
Yes. You asked me what I thought of it, and I went, "It's shite," and I was being reductive. It's not shite. I enjoyed lots of parts of it. Yeah, literally. I want Brian to follow me if I can be spicy enough. But enjoyed my time with the characters, but I think it's unacceptable that you can just have films that are so self-indulgent that, like, I keep wishing that Tarantino will have a little bit of sympathy for the people sitting through his movies, and time again, it just doesn't happen. And that's not to say that I don't enjoy pretty all of them pretty much, but like just the way I said it to you was, if I wanted to write a homage to Skerries, County Dublin, the best damn town in Ireland with the only west facing harbour on the east coast, which leads to beautiful sunsets, and I called it Once Upon a Time in Skerries, and I set a plot that happens to be in it.
I'm letting you dig your... Keep digging.
No, I'm only going to continue digging.
No, please, God.
I'm really intrigued to hear...
That's how I felt. Once Upon a Time in Skerries.
I will write that someday. But cool. I enjoyed my time in Hollywood, but all of Timothy Oliphant's scenes,
yeah,
I found to be pointless. I found it's cool that you love old TV, mate, but you don't need to show it to me.
Yeah. I mean, okay, like, that's fair.
He's got radio ads. He's got entire scenes from old
TV
movies.
Shows, yeah.
A lot of it's fun and camp and parodyable. The argument that Margot Robbie doesn't have a lot of lines, but her presence is felt through it.
You don't think it holds water, yeah?
No, she... Like,
you
she's
disagree? Like, you
no,
think...
yeah, her main job in the film is to move her hips. Like, she dances from scene to scene going like, this is a laugh. And I can understand what it represents and stuff.
Yeah.
But it's just not a character. I don't, maybe she was never meant to be a character, but she does have a lot of screen time. So it's this kind of half plot that I just, I don't know, the whole thing just irked me the wrong way.
Yeah. I mean, like, I will say that, like, actually, I would recommend, actually, if you are interested, there's a great podcast, the Directors Guild of America did this, have this podcast series. It's Directors on Directors. And Paul Thomas Anderson did one with Quentin Tarantino about Once Upon a Time in Hollywood.
Brilliant.
And talked about it. And like Quentin Tarantino, in the podcast, he talks about it. He's like, there is no plot to this film, really. It's not a film with a plot. I mean, there's like a small little sliver of it running through it.
Yeah.
But really what this is like, you're hanging out with these people. It's a day in the life.
Okay.
That's it. It's a day in the life. And like, you look at something like, you know, Dazed and Confused or Everybody Wants Them.
Yeah, Richard Linklater, I think, is
does it very well.
They're just glimpses into
exactly. That's it. You're glimpsing into these people's lives. So
I wish he'd fucking told me that before I went in expecting a plot today.
Yeah, see, that's
it. I would have had a much better time if I was at peace with that.
Yeah, I think that's it. But like, I mean, I guess like, you know, if you're not kind of catching that in the first maybe 20 minutes,
you're
still
for
looking
slog.
For a plot, you're in, yeah, it's going to feel like a slog.
Yeah.
And don't get me wrong, like, I went into it, I was like, I am ready for whatever fucking comes out of this screen. I just want to see this.
Yeah.
And automatically I was like, great, I'm just going to take this in.
Yeah.
And whatever. I want to see it again because I want to see it with somebody else and see what they make of it. Like,
yeah.
And I'm going to tell them, like, look, it's a bit long and it's a bit long drawn out and it's just that and the other and da 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 da. And I worry as well. I worry myself that, like, I was just so fucking... Because I said this that when I was reviewing it, I was like, this was so blasted in my face.
Yes.
That I was like, this is hitting my Venn diagram of things that I personally like. That I'm like, oh my God.
I feel like I might have had the mirror image of that where the guy next to me was checking his watch.
Right.
And then I started noticing how many times he had checked his watch.
Yeah. And that pulls you out.
And then I was like, he's right.
you're going to spend another 20 minutes on bounty law.
Yeah.
Jesus Christ. Like,
I would like to see it again.
But not right
away. Are you sure you would? Are you sure you would, Owen?
Not right away.
What about you? Yeah. What do you think?
No, I will see it. I will see it. Like I said, I just need
to find... I think you'll enjoy it.
I need to find time to
see
it. So.
I wish I had heard someone give out like this so that I could go and enjoy it.
I think there were plenty of people giving out about it.
Yeah, it's just...
What did you think of the Bruce Lee thing, by the way?
I didn't think it was that big a factor in it. And I do understand people's argument that he's fighting a fictional character so that it doesn't matter. Maybe Brad Pitt could have bet him, but he probably couldn't have bet him.
No. Yeah,
that lad.
Yeah.
Well, now I know what happens, guys.
No, it's left ambiguous. You're safe.
No, it's left ambiguous.
Nah, it's fine. I already read about it online.
Yeah.
People are the worst.
Like, it's that thing of like, you can't enjoy anything clean anymore.
Yeah. Brad Pitt's really good in it.
He is really good.
And Leo. They're, yeah.
They're really, really good in it.
But even, some like...
I just sit and watch them do anything.
That's the thing.
I expected
so much credit to come from at least these two. And I really did enjoy their presence. But even like, say, all of Pacino's scenes, felt like he had been texted the day before to come in and do it. I just thought there was no...
It was checked out, like?
Yeah, I just felt like... It wasn't that he was checked out personally. It was that I didn't get to go, oh my God, I'm finally seeing these Titans on screen. I was like, oh, that scene's over.
Yeah, there's a kind of smallness to it or
maybe
something.
There's too much built up to finally reuniting these actors in this scenario.
Yeah,
yeah, fair.
So it's my own fault.
I wonder if the same could... Oh, well, I hope not, but could it happen with The Irishman as well? We'll have to see, you know?
Yeah, I think that is a film that is going to be crushed under the weight of its own expectations.
Oh my God, that makes so much sense. I never thought of that.
That was poetic.
I genuinely think... I think that film... Like, people are going to look at that, hope for that to be like the fucking second coming of Jesus. And it's just going
second coming of Goodfellas.
Or second coming of Goodfellas. And it's just going to be fine. People are thinking like, oh my God, it's like Casino and Goodfellas. Oh! And it's not.
Yeah.
It's just not. Like, I could be wrong though. I'm happy to... I hope I'm wrong. I hope I'm wrong. I don't think I will be.
We're going to end on a light note. D has finally seen Falling in Love. So for our listener, if you don't remember this, D, go on, you take it.
Yeah, so in is spelt I-N-N, by the way.
Oh! Amazing, amazing. I really need you to talk about this because I saw a trailer for it and I just, it was like...
God.
It was like that thing of... Oh yeah, we were talking about it. It's basically like SNL, that thing, one-dimensional character, female character.
Yeah,
the movie.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
It was the fact that you said she runs into a guy who happens to be a contractor and volunteer fireman.
Yes.
I'm just picturing the Budweiser right now. Like, I can just see the Budweiser in his
hand.
And he takes the shirt off. Yeah. And he takes the shirt off.
He does take the shirt off.
Told you.
While he's, you know, doing some heavy lifting.
Labor.
Exactly. Exactly. So... Plot-wise, for anyone who doesn't remember. Oh, and it's Christina Milian, because of course it is.
AM to PM, like, what a tune. Yeah. Like.
By the way, there's a scene in this where they turn on the radio, and I was gravely disappointed that they didn't have AM to PM playing. That would have been perfect.
I mean,
you know what? I would have forgiven the film some, not all, some of its flaws if it had actually had a Christina Milian song play.
Maybe she did. Did she write a song in, like, the end credits or something for it? Maybe? No.
I don't know.
You have
she
to
is.
Pay extra for that.
She was like she was a total one hit wonder.
No, she had loads. She had Say I as well. Okay, maybe I would.
She's a one hit wonder. She's a complete.
No,
one-hit
she
wonder.
Had a few.
Did she
had
really?
She dip it low as well. Dip it low, pick it up slow. No, just me and my disco days. You guys don't remember this? No.
AM to PM is the only one I remember.
And it's not because I'm too old.
Like, users are the same age. Like,
yeah,
so like,
yeah. I feel like my fellow ladies out there would know the songs.
Okay.
Christina, you dance to them in the disco while you guys probably went out for a smoke or something.
That's what I was doing. Bench pressing.
And then AM to PM was coming on just as you were coming back into the disco. Yeah. And that's
so
why
we only heard
that
bit,
yeah.
It's replacing the Angelus. They're only going to do it at 6 p.m.
But I mean, even the opening scene to this. So she's like underappreciated at work. Her workplace is like all men, of course. And then, like, her boyfriend is unwilling to commit. So she gets drunk on a bottle of wine one night and enters this winning competition, wins. So she flies off to New Zealand.
A what competition?
Win an inn.
Of course.
And then she wins the inn and then she goes to visit it. And of course, it's not the way it was advertised. It's sort of dilapidated. And there's a goat that lives in it. And for some reason, the filmmakers...
I thought you said ghost.
No, a goat.
That would be interesting.
That would have been a bit
more interesting.
That would have
been brilliant.
And then
just
she
a goat.
And then she has to choose between the ghost and the volunteer firefighter. Would have been a way better film. But no, there's a goat that lives there. And for some reason, the filmmakers think this goat is hilarious.
Brilliant.
And they keep on cutting back to the goat doing goat things, like going through her luggage and stuff like this. And it's just like, so terrible.
Would Kiwis cringe at it a lot more? Is there any casual New Zealand racism?
See, I genuinely wouldn't know. I feel like I'd need to watch it with, someone from Australia. Because they might enjoy it. Oh, sorry, New Zealand. Sorry.
Different country.
Sorry.
They don't like that.
They really don't like that. They really, really don't like that.
Not at all.
They like it's like us and English
people. I've just never been over, so I wouldn't know to either. It's on my bucket list for sure. I want to go both.
New Zealand is lovely.
Yeah.
New Zealand.
You've been to New Zealand?
I have, yeah.
Did you do any Lord of the Rings?
Yeah, that's what I was going to ask.
No,
what?
I didn't know. I was in, my girlfriend lived in New Zealand. She lived in New Zealand for 6 months and I went over to visit her. Yeah, it was really nice. We were in Auckland. We didn't get to do any of the Lord of the Rings stuff. I was quite annoyed. Yeah.
That's a shame.
It was like, it was just after the earthquakes though.
So oh my God.
That's why it was like, they couldn't, like, flights were canceled.
Could you just tell me what Lord of the Rings stuff you would have done if you had time so I could still live vicariously through you?
I would have done it all. I would have gone to the Shire.
He would have gone for the ultimate package.
Are you kidding me? Like, I literally would have gone.
Airlifted to Edoras.
Edoras, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Gone to the fucking Minas Tirith and the fucking, which is a quarry apparently.
Wow.
And like, just be like, wow, it's Minas Tirith. It's a fucking quarry. It's Minas Tirith. Look. The White Tree of Gondor.
Did you ever see that episode of the? Oh God, it's so funny. You should go back and watch it. But although actually that wasn't in New Zealand, was it? Was Hobbiton in New Zealand as well?
Yeah, Hobbiton is in New Zealand.
Okay,
yeah.
Well,
I knew. There's
an episode of the Graham Norton Show. Like, it's quite old because God love him, Robin Williams is on it. But right. It's Robin Williams, Elijah Wood, and Graham Norton talking about Hobbiton, and Elijah talks about going back to visit it, and it is so, so funny. Robin Williams is cracking all these great jokes about the hobbits
and living with them.
No, it is such a funny video, just showing like the brilliance of him again. But yeah. Lord of the Rings nerds have to watch this. It's amazing. But Falling in Love. Yeah, what's funny about this is that I was meant to write a review for a site and instead I decided to write a listicle of all the terrible things in it.
Oh my God, I love that.
It was hilarious. Yeah, yeah. But like,
Can you give us a couple more bits?
Let me think. Oh, there's one bit in the film where she's there with the contractor and they're talking about the old fireplace and he's saying that she has to keep it, you know, she shouldn't get rid of it when they're doing up the house, and she's kind of looking at it and she's like, actually, you know what? Yeah, she is a beaut. And he says something like, she sure is, but he's looking at her as he says it.
Oh no.
And there's another bit where, I swear to God, they're sitting on a beach reading World War One love letters. It's just, God, I could go on and on. There's this cafe that she visits because she has these two friends there, and they know, like, everyone knows each other in the community because this place is really small. But at one point, her and the girl and the contractor are leaving the place, but they're like fighting or whatever. And the cafe owner says, I don't know if they're supposed to kill each other or fall in love. And then his partner says, maybe both, which doesn't even make sense. It literally doesn't make sense. Was that meant to be romantic? There are a few snippets, but like, it's some things I find enjoyably bad. Like, what was that? It's so bad, I can't even remember the name of it. Was it Secret Obsession? That really bad thriller.
Oh God, yes.
I saw a few weeks ago.
That was
enjoyably bad, but this was just bad. I remember at one point, similar to what you were talking about earlier, looking at the watch, and like, I was only halfway through it. This film is nearly 2 hours long,
really?
And it feels like it's going on for a day. I just couldn't believe how long this movie was. Oh.
Is it good for a bottle of wine?
No, it's not good for anything or anyone. It's just bad. Although, mind you, I've probably encouraged a lot of people to check out.
This is it. Like, yeah. Like, it's, yeah. It came up on like the, what do you call it? The,
yeah, it's come up on a lot of people we think you'd like.
Yeah.
Like, what kind of movies do people
In-based movies.
Yeah, this was it. Yeah. Cause like, I was literally, like, I was at home one of the days, it was over the weekend, and like, it came on the thing and I was in the other room and Kate was like, my girlfriend was like, get in here. You gotta see this. You gotta see this. Get the fuck in here. And I like, walked in and I was like, literally.
Yeah,
exactly,
the trailer.
And I was like, is this real? Is this a piss? I thought it was like a funny or a die thing.
For
like,
you. No.
I thought it was like a funny or a die thing or something. Like, and it's real. It's really real.
I'm probably going to see it.
It's 2 hours long, man. Like,
if you've got 2 hours to kill, fair play.
Do you think I'm busy?
Do you think I don't have some kind of a social life? You're right, I don't. I'll totally watch it.
All right, I'm going to wrap up the show, but what have people got to look forward to next week? Is it too early to say?
Oh my gosh, it's this again. No, I actually do know what it is.
What is
it's
it?
Okay, because I always cover for Brian, because I always know what's out next week. There's Downton Abbey the movie.
Oh, yes!
And there's Hustlers. And one I'm really, really, really excited to talk about, because I found it very funny, Extraordinary, which is a new Irish comedy, which is basically like Ghostbusters if it was set in Mayo.
With Will Forte from the film Flash.
Yes.
Yeah.
I am so excited to see that.
And Maeve Higgins is on the show next week as well.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, right. To talk about the film.
To talk about the film, yeah. Maeve Higgins is coming on. She's going to talk about it.
Aren't you brilliant?
Aren't you great?
No, it's her and Will Forte.
The two of them?
Yeah.
Oh, my God. Because you were talking to Will Forte?
Yeah.
I didn't know that. I thought you were talking to... I thought it was Maeve Higgins and the director. Oh, my God, Will Forte. Sorry, I didn't realize.
Has this happened in the past?
Yeah.
Oh, this was... So this
is
was
this a
like,
cloak and dagger maneuver to...
So this interview happened, I want to say, 2 or 3 months ago around...
Where was
yeah,
I?
Yeah, because it was on a...
Oh, that was when they were doing The Fly.
It
you're
was
right.
when they were doing
yes,
The Fly.
Yes, yes,
so that's
did Will
why...
Forte come into this building?
No.
This was... I went out to them.
Okay.
I know, I love Will Forte.
I love Will Forte.
I think it's him. See, this is really bad because I don't know who he is, but I'm pretty sure it was Maeve Higgins and Will Forte who I interviewed together.
The director.
I suppose you'll have to listen to find out. No, it wasn't the director. It was...
Was he American?
Yes.
Have you seen the film MacGruber?
No. See, I haven't seen his movies. I've seen Run and Jump, so I've seen the other Irish movie he was in.
Yeah, it's that guy, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it's him. So
it's
Will Forte,
it is him.
Yeah.
So there you go. KFBR it is him.
The Solomon Brothers. Okay.
KFBR 932. KFBR 932.
And I will hopefully have watched a couple of more Will Forte movies before.
Watch MacGruber. Watch MacGruber. It's really funny. It's really, really good.
It'll really help with the review.
Yeah.
Okay.
It will. No, MacGruber is really funny. It's so funny.
This is also if you're listening at home.
Yes.
Just go watch from MacGruber.
Go watch MacGruber.
That
it's
is
so
really
fucking
good.
Funny, like.
All right. Slán an bhaile.
Situation.